He's not just the law, he's also Britain's most famous comic book character. This week on the 2080 Thrillcast, we talk to three writers and one artist about what it takes to write Judge Dredd. Borag Thungathlitz, and welcome to the 2080 Thrillcast. I am your host, Mulch R, and we've got another full episode for you this week where we're talking to three writers and one artist about what it takes to write the greatest lawman of the future, Judge Dredd. Rob Williams, Tom Eglinton and Michael Carroll, as well as artist Chris Weston, give you an insight into how to write the perfect Judge Dredd story. So if it's a character that you've ever wanted to write, and I'm sure many of you have, then make sure you keep your ears nice and open for some of the tips and hints that the guys are going to reveal, and they give you an insight into how they came to be writers on the strip. Completely coincidentally, of course, Rob and Chris have a new Judge Dredd story which begins in this week's Prog 2035, and I can tell you it's an absolute doozy, having read ahead, so it's going to be absolutely fascinating to hear what they've got in store. Before we get started, thank you to everybody who's given us feedback about our most recent episodes, including the interview with Alan Hebden. We got some really nice feedback online and also via email. If you want to let us know what you think about the 2080 Thrillcast or suggest ideas and guests for future episodes, then drop us a line on Thrillcast, that's all one word, at 2080online.com. And thank you also to the Earthlits who turned out to the recent events that 2080 was at, whether it was the Alec Worley and Simon Davis signing at Forbidden Planet or the MCM Comics Expo, or even if you went along to the Stoke Newington Literary Festival to hear Steve McManus and Matt Smith talk. Thank you for supporting the events 2080 has had over the last little while, and keep your eyes peeled for more in the future. We're probably going to be at London Film and Comic Con, assuming we can get the droids to emerge from the Nerve Centre, as well as London Super Comic Con on August Bank Holiday. San Diego, of course, will be there with our friends from Rebellion, and Thought Bubble towards the end of September. But without much further ado, let's crack on with this week's episode. Rob Williams and Chris Weston will be names that will be familiar to any Dredd fan, both veterans now of writing the greatest lawman of the future. And like I said, they have a new story coming up in Prog 2035. So to give you an idea of what it takes, whether you're an artist or writer, to put together a Judge Dredd episode, it's great to welcome them both to the Thrillcast. Hi, guys.
How's it going?
Hello.
So let's talk a little bit about the story that you've got coming up first, because that's I've read it. It's great. Rob, do you want to tell us a little bit about the premise behind it?
No, I don't, because I mean, what you'll find with this story is, I think we're kind of there's a twist which comes pretty quickly, right. So I don't. I think we're both aware we don't want to give too much away in whatever we say about it. But I mean, the setup of it is, I think the story launches with you meet a cadet judge who is with a very good, well-respected senior judge out on the streets. And a crisis happens and Dredd arrives. And then things go down a road which I don't want to spoil too much about, which isn't selling it too much, I guess. But yeah, it's... This is one that it's all about the twist, I think.
Okay.
And the twists keep coming as well, which I really like. I mean, the end of episode one, you think, wow, I didn't expect that. But you wait till you see what happens at the end of episode two.
Yeah. I think Chris and I are both quite pleased with this one.
Hmm.
In terms of this story, was this a collaboration between the two of you on the story? Because I correct me if I'm wrong, but I think in the past there's been an incident where Chris has come up with the premise of a story and you, Rob, have kind of fleshed it out for him to draw.
I think, yeah. I mean, Rob and I share ideas all the time. You won't believe how many massive blockbuster movies haven't been made from our amazing ideas. It's like, if I think about 1% of all the ideas we discuss eventually see the light of day, which is quite annoying. I need to clone myself so I can, you know, crack on and draw them all.
Yeah, I mean, Chris is, I'm not just saying this because he's on, Chris is very good at high concept ideas. And I think what has happened a bunch of times in the past is Chris has suggested something and I'll run with it and we just knock it back and forth between us. And I think what, if I remember right with the kind of genesis of this one, I think it was just a case of Chris saying, correct me if I'm wrong, you know, I fancy doing a dread. And then we didn't really have anything. And we just got on the phone and just sort of knocked it. Knocked it together. It wasn't a case of, oh, I've got this great idea for a dread. It was a case of us sitting down and kind of bashing it, this one into shape. But I think what tends to happen is Chris goes, oh, I quite fancy exploring this aspect of dread or something. And I'll go, well, what if we do this? And we seem to kind of come to a middle ground somewhere along the line.
Well, I wanted to do a, without giving too much away, I wanted to do a story about a judge gone bad. And Rob always wanted to do a story about an SJS officer who is going too far as well. So we just sort of fused the two ideas together.
Yeah, and then and something new came out of it as well at the back end, which I don't think either of us had planned coming in. It just kind of like a natural evolution. But I mean, I've in the back of my mind for the last few years, I've kind of thought, oh, it'd be cool to do a spin-off story called maybe called The Skulls or something, purely about the SJS department, because I don't think that's been explored a lot. And we were talking about that, and that led us down the road. We've ended up with this story, which is not the direction I was initially intending to go.
Because this is quite unusual. In comics, and 2080 is no exception, there is usually... unless you're going down the pure Marvel method of you know, the artist putting something on the page and the writer filling in the blanks, there's usually quite a separation. So somebody does a script and then Matt sends it onto the artist that is chosen. This sounds a lot more like a cooperative endeavor.
It is initially. I think in the idea stage, it very much is. And I think in a few dreads we've done. Including the Christmas one we did not so long ago, it's a case of, I think the overall idea of it is very much there's bits of me in there and there's bits of Chris in there, but then in terms of when we partition the work out, I mean, in terms of the scripting's all me, and in terms of the art is all Chris, but it's coming from a place where we've broken the back of the story together just through talking on the phone.
I mean, why do you think that is? Why do you think that you two in particular are in sync? Is it just that, you know, you like the same dread stories? Is it just that you like the same wider media?
I think what I like about Rob's work is the humour. I mean, Rob makes me laugh in real life, and his humour creeps into his work so much, and I think that's what draws me to him really.
Yeah, and I like working with Chris because he draws good, which is very simplistic. And also, I like the fact that he plainly wants to kill me when we work together, but because he just sort of blames me for crowd scenes and things. When the truth of the matter is, with that Christmas one, he went, oh, I fancy doing a block war. And then he gave me loads of grief for writing a block war.
I gave you so much grief for my idea.
Yeah. It's all Williams' fault making me draw block wars. No, you said you wanted a block war.
Can I just say, though, I mean, after the block war episode, I did say we should do something smaller scale, like a character piece. But and then page one of the script, you've got like a biker gang attacking an ambulance as a hover wagon sweeps down and strafes the street with bullets. So, yeah, this scale has been really reduced.
Yeah, but the irony is, if I'd done Talking Heads in a bar or something, you would have quit by page three. So
I'm sensing a deep tension at the heart of this creative partnership.
Well, I mean, I don't think I'm giving too much away. A few years ago, Chris did virtually attack me over a dinner table in a London.
I think I remember that, and I also remember the funny shade of puce that Chris went after you said what you said.
Anyway, let's not go down that road.
So let's talk a bit broader about dread. This episode is you know, the beginner's guide to writing dread. Rob, what for you are the elements of a good dread story that the you know, a prospective writer should be thinking about, should be covering?
That's a tough one. You need a good mystery or dramatic plot. You know, it's got to have the framework, I suppose. You know, there's a problem that needs solving, and dread usually is the one that comes in and solves it. In terms of the thing that then makes it interesting and lifts it, is it's partly the setting, is that Mega City 1 is just crazy, and just all insanity lives there, and all human stupidity lives there, which means that, you know, there's probably, if it's a good dread story, it's got a strong satirical edge. You know, and then you've got this fantastic central character who, on the one hand, is a straight up Dirty Harry sort of badass, but on the other hand, you know, as I like to write him, and I think as people like Al Ewing like to write him, and you know, and others, is this churning mass of neuroses and hatred and all these other things underneath the surface. So if you can get all that in, then you're probably doing dread right. But I think what Chris said earlier, I mean, you look back at the classic early dread stuff, I think it's possibly the humour and the satire that lifts it above just being a standard sci-fi actioner, you know what I mean? It's far more than that, and that's because people have taken the mickey over the years a lot with it.
And do you think there are? Because one of the things that I notice an awful lot is people's reaction to certain stories, where they go, "Well, that doesn't feel right," you know, it doesn't quite get dread. But when you actually ask them to quantify that, everyone's got a different response. Do you think that sometimes, because Judge Dredd has been so many things to so many different people, that it can be difficult to pin down, you know, exactly what makes a good Dredd story?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think my take on it is, I mean, there's people who've probably written him in the past and have done it like he's some kind of RoboCop type of figure, and he's not. But I mean, I think at the heart of Dredd is black humour, I guess. I think that, I don't know, I suspect when people sort of go, oh, it doesn't feel like Dredd, I suspect it's possibly lacking that black humour, which is kind of inherent in the best Dredd stuff. But the wonder of Dredd is, and the reason we love it so much, is it can encompass all kinds of stories. I mean, that's the thing. You can look at something like America, which is far more a more sort of serious sort of political statement story.
The reason ethics don't tend to be very funny.
Say again, sorry?
The reason ethics don't tend to be very humorous, do they? Sort of like the Tour of Duty or... Day of Chaos. They're all quite grim.
They are. Yeah, it's tough to do humour when how many people died in Day of Chaos? I agree. I think you're talking about the beginner's guide to writing Dredd. I think Dredd is quite tough to write. To get Dredd right, I think he would be very easy to write wrong, which is again a not very sophisticated way of putting it. And it's because it does have a voice. The strip has a voice, I think, which is possibly maybe down to sort of Wagner and Grant and things like that. And I think if you grew up reading it, then you kind of recognize that voice, maybe. I don't know, but I don't want to be too sort of... I'm sure there are fine writers who never grew up reading 2000 AD who could do fantastic thread stuff.
In terms of your first attempts at Dredd, Rob... What was the challenge that you found? Did it come to you naturally, or were there false starts?
Yeah, I think so. I think fear more than anything. I think when you write a Dredd or you write a Batman or any of those characters, you've got to get past that. Oh my God, there's the weight of the quality of work and the weight of the stories you grew up loving when you were younger and whatever. And then with Dredd, it's really easy to fall into him being this quippy, badass, you know, hyper-violent sort of like, you know, my turn creep. you know, which is fine, which is dread. But I think for me, the turning point came when I started to write him as a human being. And then he became way more interesting to write. And I began to enjoy writing Dredd way more. And I felt like I was actually writing Dredd. So I would suggest if anyone, if in a beginner's guide, you know, and this is true of anyone you write, you know, you've got to write them as a human being. Their reactions have got to be right for them and driven by what's going on inside them. You know what I mean? He's not a robot. He's not, just a uniform. He's even though he's a clone and all these things, he's a human being, and he's got, and this is when I got into stuff like writing Titan, I think, and Enceladus, and that's what I was exploring. And so that's difficult to do, and I think you've got to pay your dues a bit. You know, I'm not sure anyone comes in and gets Dredd right early doors. He's quite tricky. Mm.
Chris, looking back at some of the stories, the Dredd stories that you've drawn over the years, you know, I'm thinking not just about the kind of PJ Maybe stuff of recent years, but all the way back to things like Crazy Barry and Little Mo. They just seem to be, as Rob was saying, a vein of comedy throughout all of the stories that you've done. There always seems you seem to be drawn to the black comedy aspect.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe that says more about me, really. I think especially recently, the Grimm stories, the Day of Chaos, which lasted a year, which I loved, but we've had lots of very serious Dredd stories. So, you know, I like providing an alternative. You know, I think it's fun to do to be the guy that does the sensitive Clegg after a year of Day of Chaos. As I say, it is a satirical strip, really, and it's always had that satire to it. And I'm someone who's interested in current affairs, so it's a good place to get that out of your system.
And what for you are the elements of a good Dredd story? I'm not talking necessarily themes like, you know, black comedy. I'm thinking more in terms of structure. Do you prefer the ones with a nice little payoff at the end, or something with a bit more meat? You know, sometimes there isn't the opportunity in say a one-parter to explore sort of wider, bigger themes. At other times, you know, there's not necessarily the payoff that you would hope for.
I mean, at the moment, because of the way I'm choosing to run my career, I don't settle very long on any one project. I'm a bit of a grasshopper at the moment, leaping from, you know, films to illustration to record sleeves to comics. I'm a bit all over the place, so I tend to veer towards the shorter stories, the one or two parters, but there's a growing voice inside of me that says, you know, come on, you need to knuckle down and do a, you know, a good 10-parter Dredd soon. You know, draw something that can be collected into a nice book at the end of it.
I agree.
I mean, that's what I'm kind of hoping with this introduction of this new villain, our recurring villain, who eventually we can basically have a longer story, but that's broken up over a longer period of time, and then a bit like PJ Maybe was, and then but something that will still work when it's all collected together at the end. It will still work as one larger story.
Chris, as an artist, if Matt came to you with a script from a new writer on Judge Dredd, what would be the things that you would be looking for as an artist? To say, you know, I want that works, that doesn't.
Let me have a think. I think I'd want to see in the work that he knows the world. You know, I'd feel much happier if instead of saying in panel one, Dredd rides down the street. I'd be much happier if it was Dredd rides down the street passing a Palais de Boeing. I'd think, yeah, this guy knows his stuff. You know, I like a sense of a writer to know a sense of the characters and the city's history.
Rob, do you think sometimes the not necessarily continuity, but the past of the strip can be quite restrictive? I'm thinking about in terms of people who haven't necessarily grown up reading Judge Dredd in 2000 AD, but perhaps have a different authorial voice. Do you think sometimes it can be very difficult for Dredd as a strip to evolve and change over time, because the change over the years has been so glacial? Do you think there's a risk of everyone conforming to or feeling that they need to conform to one way of telling a story or a particular feel, a particular voice that doesn't necessarily move things along?
I think that's more an editorial decision, really. Mm. I mean, for instance, like Chris has got far better knowledge of Dredd's, the minutiae of Dredd's history than I have. And you trust Matt Smith, if you suggest something, to sort of steer you or to say, well, I don't think that really sort of fits the kind of world. I mean, an example of that is interesting is, when I pitched Titan, it was very much a case of, I said at the end, look, I want to blow up Titan. I just want to, and I want things, there's got to be a payoff, I felt, to this story. There has to be an arc, Dredd's world has to have changed at the end of this. And Matt's reaction was to say, well, I'm not sure we can do that because John Wagner might want to have plans to do something with Titan down the road. And I argued, not through any kind of disrespect, as sort of, just what I said, the fact that, look, there needs to be, and I think that, I think that's important with the people who are writing Dredd's core stories. We need to have the freedom to actually evolve the world and to change things a bit, you know what I mean? Otherwise, there's a feeling that the stories don't have, the cachet or import or something like that. And you're just limiting the effect you can have as a writer, do you know what I mean? There has to be, any good story, I think, if it's got depth, will have an effect on the character emotionally and on potentially on the world. But again, I mean, this isn't create your own. This is like we have an editor who knows Dredd's world inside out and is very good at saying, oh, I don't think we can do that. Or you can do that so far. But again, that's all about part of the confidence of writing Dredd all the time. You know what I mean? You do feel, I can move his world on a little bit here, you know. But as you say, it is fairly glacial all the time because you know, the big changes. I think we all still feel this is effectively Wagner's world. Do you know what I mean? And we're just playing in it.
Now, Rob, you've got a history of bringing in artists that have worked in US comics that haven't worked for 2000 AD. I'm thinking people like James Harren, Guy Davis. Explain a little bit how that process works, because quite often we get people asking, oh, I've got an idea for a script and I've got an artist lined up. And we always say, well, you know, Matt Smith prefers to have the decision over that, but you seem to be able to bring these guys in. Tell us a bit about how that process actually works.
Scab labor, I call them.
Yeah, breaking the strike lines of the heroic British artists. That's just a case of me chatting to different artists that I like their work, and I feel they would do a cracking Dredd as well, because I think that's not always the case with some artists you work with, but some artists you do. And the thing I've found more than anything is just like these artists would want a go at Dredd mostly, you know, even if it's only have one go at Dredd. I think a lot of artists have got that sort of itch to scratch.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Even Mobius said to Dave Taylor, oh, I'd love to do a Dredd.
Oh, God.
Why didn't that happen? But then you kind of get what I've done is I like to think, hopefully, that I've worked with Matt Smith long enough that I've said to Matt, well, look, you know, this, I've got this dread, and this guy's interested in drawing it. And Matt has said it every, when it, I've done this, he needs to see a sketch or something, so he knows they're not going to sort of like go off piste with the dread out uniform and the bike and things like this. And they've been good enough to do sketches, and Matt's been good enough to kind of go, yeah, okay. So that happened with RM Guerra, and it happened with Guy Davis. Well, I feel very fortunate to have done that with Guy, actually. It's not only is a lovely little strip, but I don't think Guy's done comics pretty much since. I think he's been off in film world. So that was kind of feels like a little bit of a rarity. And James Harran, like you say, and it's a fresh take. I mean, the interesting thing comes in where you get someone like James Harran, who I don't think had even read Dread before. I might be wrong about this, before agreeing to do it. But go ahead.
There's something quite thrilling about seeing a new take on Judge Dredd in his world. I remember when John Byrne did that one off in the summer special, and you just you get a little buzz out of seeing that world seen through the eyes of a new artist, especially an established artist.
Yeah, I think with those three guys as well, with Guerra, with Guy Davis, and Harran, I felt that all three of them would had a style that would fit in with Dread. Do you know? So that was kind of interesting. And aside from anything else, they're just great artists. I really wanted to work with all three of them. So there you go.
We've got to get Jose Luis Garcia Lopez on to do a Dread.
Oh man, yeah. Okay, I'll work on it.
Yeah. Well, and I always wanted to see Jerry Ordway have a go at it as well.
I don't know, Jerry. That's up to you. Get him in.
Rob, just to kind of come back to the theme of the whole episode is, if somebody wants to sit down and write a Judge Dredd story, what would be your recommendation, aside from, read Dread comics, read whatever? How would you recommend they go about it? What when they sat down at their typewriter, word processor, computer, pad and pen, whatever, what should be their first steps?
I think the one good thing, is this is true of Dread as well as writing for 2000 AD in general, is it's short and sharp. It lends itself to structure, to a basic writing structure. So let's say you've got 6 pages for a one-off Dread, right? So you will have pages, say 1 and 2 will be your setup of your mystery. Pages 3 and 4 will be the middle act, where there is a goal to be overcome and a character, whether it's Dread or a different character, wants that goal. And maybe Dread is the one trying to get something, or maybe Dread is the one stopping them get something. And then something that's implicit in 2000 AD writing, and again in Dread, is then there'll be a twist, at the end. I still think one of the best one-off Dreads is The Runner, which was recently in the
2000 AD's Greatest.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So it's in that, and it's a one-off Dread. It's absolutely brilliant.
It's a classic.
Beautifully written by Wagner, beautifully drawn by Duncan Figueredo. But more than anything, it's got that sort of thing. It's got brilliant character work. It's got Dread. There's a goal that needs something that needs stopping, just basic sort of dramatic thrust. And then at the end, it's got a really sort of twist. The twist is kind of twisted. It's kind of like, it's got a really pathos and a bittersweet end to it that affects you and sticks around afterwards. And I think in terms of sort of a starting point, I would say, if you want to say to anyone who's never read Dread and you just want a one-off 6-pager, then just give them that. And I think you can learn a lot from that.
I think there's always been to Dread a sort of Tales from the Crypt quality, sort of a very black humor, dark tale, usually with a certain amount of humour in it, and let's say with an all important twist ending.
Hi, And thank you to Rob and to Chris for chatting away. Really looking forward to the new story and what it might bring in the future. Another couple of writers who are relatively new to writing Judge Dredd, Tom Eglinton and Michael Carroll. Michael has been with us for the best part of a decade, so it gives you an idea of over 40 years just how we consider people new and, you know, veteran. Tom has written both Judge Dredd and Dredd World stories, while Michael was responsible for the recent Every Empire Falls epic, which was collected earlier this year. They have a bit of a different perspective, having come up through a slightly different route to working for 2000 AD. So it's great to welcome them to the podcast. Welcome to the Thrillcast, guys.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having us. I like what you've done with the plates.
It's our absolute pleasure. Well, what's quite nice is that the Skype connection, because there's a slight delay and it's a little bit tinny, it does make you sound more like actual droids.
Yeah. Well, this is me calling from our Vladivostok offices, which is why there's the satellite delay.
I'm in glamorous East Worthing.
Wow. Whoa. Wow.
East Worthing.
They're yeah, posh. Yeah. Not even the good side of Worthing.
So guys, let's talk about writing Judge Dredd, because, like I said, you're both relatively new to it. You're part of the new crop of writers that have come up in the last sort of decade or so. Michael, I'll talk to you first. Tell us a little bit about how you came to be writing Judge Dredd in the first place.
I've been very lucky, I have to say. I had a couple of future shocks. Actually, it was two future shocks published at a year and a half apart, I think. And then the Mighty Targ asked me to pitch ideas for the Tales from the Black Museum. So I pitched a few of those. And I think even before the first one came out, he said to me, "Look, do you want to pitch a few Dredd ideas?" And naturally I went, "Oh, okay then." And you know, obviously I threw myself at it with vigor. So I have been very lucky, but then on the other hand, I was relatively new to comics, but I wasn't new to writing. I mean, at that stage, I had 20-something novels already published, plus countless other things. Plus, I had a little bit of history already in 2008 from writing the articles under the pseudonym Sprout for the now-defunct 2008 Review website, much missed. And plus, I had a couple of those in the magazine. So I knew Matt, Targ, and I think he knew I was worth taking a risk on. I hope I've proven to be right. Or maybe it's all too embarrassing for him to say, no, it's not working out, but he just can't.
I feel like that sometimes.
how do I face him? I don't really see myself as a new Dredd writer as such. It's been 6.5 years, I think, since my first Dredd came out. So, you know, until I've been writing for about 6 months before that. So I think I'm fairly established at this stage.
I think it's more in the context of 40 years of Judge Dredd that we class you as relatively new. What was your first kind of creative reaction when Matt said, you know, do some Dredd? Where did your mind instantly go?
It instantly went to, hooray, I'm rich, because I obviously, you know, that's where the big money is. But no, what actually happened was I went, fantastic. And I thought, I can do this. This is amazing. And I bounded along full of confidence until I started writing down some of my ideas, because I'd come to believe that over the years I'd gathered in my head thousands and thousands of Dredd ideas. But really, there was about four. And I just sort of, I must have just kept going back to them in my head. When I came to write them down, I went, ooh. And I realized it was quite daunting then. So at first, yeah, very exciting. Then it was terrifying. And that's where we are, actually. We're still terrifying. So it was a shock to realize that talking about writing Dredd is not as easy. It's not as hard as writing it itself, like so many things. Talking ain't doing. So that was almost interesting. And very interesting also to get the feedback from Matt when I sort of began to realize that, yeah, this was pretty serious. This was not just writing a fan piece. I'd done a few fan scripts where you send it in and there's never any feedback. This was the big leagues. So that was quite exciting.
And tell us a little bit about your first Dredd story.
The first one was written was Blood Culture. And that appeared in the magazine number 306. So that was the first issue to be published in 2011. Yeah, that was an interesting one because I did a little thing that I've been talking about in my head for a long time of the idea of someone being a drug smuggler. But what happens is they have their the drugs already in their blood, and then it's filtered out at a blood bank. So I wrote this idea, set it in Meg City 1, threw in Judge Dredd, or set it outside Meg City 1, threw in Judge Dredd, and there we go. So that was good because it was an idea that I toyed with for possibly doing a crime novel at some point. Mm. I was able to use that idea. So that gave me a good start. I mean, I had a good meat for the story there, and I just hung the bones and hung the meat on it afterwards.
I mean, you've mentioned about having done some fanzine work before with Dredd. What's the fundamental difference, aside from the feedback that you're going to get from Matt, what's the fundamental difference between writing for a fanzine, the style, you know, the content, and actually writing it for publication?
Yeah, I suppose the fundamental difference is that you've got to really know what you're doing. You've got to really know how to tell a story in only five or six pages. And that's for a fanzine, that's kind of where you learn it. That's your training ground in some ways. I'm not that I'm disparaging the fanzines, because obviously there's some amazing stuff that gets printed in fanzines, along with some terrible stuff. But you cannot just throw out a story idea and see if it sticks. You've got to be absolutely convinced that each thing you write is the best thing that, you know, you've ever written ever. Now, you might not feel that way, you know, 10 minutes after you press send, but you've got to feel that at some point, that it's not just not just testing the water. This is for real.
Mm.
It's quite daunting.
And for you, what are the key elements that make a Dredd story?
Well, you need a something that has to be at least one element that can't be, that wouldn't work in any other story. If we pick one of my favorite Dredd stories that I wrote, an early one, which is called Caterpillars, which is it's about a young woman in Meg City 1 who's barely browbeaten by the whole city, and it looks at the beginning like she's going to throw herself off a building and she's going to kill herself. She can't take it anymore. And then in the end, we see that that's not the case. But that story wouldn't work outside of Meg City 1. It wouldn't work with any other character. You couldn't reinvent that as a Swanton Dog story or anything else, or Spider-Man even. It just has to be a Dredd tale. And that's actually one of the great advantages of Meg City 1, is that it provides you that great training ground where and sandpit, where what happens there could only happen in Meg City 1 in many cases. So that's one of the key things you need for a Dredd story. It has to be quintessentially a Dredd tale. There's a great example of the 1990s version Judge Dredd novels, if you recall those, where there's one novel in particular where you know even reading it you're going, this isn't a Judge Dredd story. And apparently the writer later on re-released the same book, but without Dredd in there. If you can take the element of the Dredd element out of the story and the story still works, then it's kind of not really a Judge Dredd story to begin with. So that's just my off-the-cuff opinion. Other people may disagree because, you know, this is a democracy and people are allowed to be wrong.
But, Tom, do you disagree?
Yes. Do I what? Disagree with what?
Everything that Mike's just said.
No. I totally, I completely agree actually, because it's a funny thing. Once you start doing Dredd, you realise what you can't do, or you can and can't do. So like trying to kind of apply, you know, a story idea you've had kicking around, and it doesn't work in Mega City 1. You know, there are sort of specific things that work really well, it's kind of working within those boundaries. Whether it goes from like, you know, the kind of self-contained story, or I mean, that's what I found. It was either self-contained stories or stuff that connects to the kind of continuum that's going on at the moment, you know, like the Day of Chaos, or whether you're referencing something from 10 or 20 years ago. You kind of mix and match, but it has to kind of fit with the universe, the Dreadverse.
I think, anyway.
Mm. Yeah. You also, that implies, of course, you need, the writer needs to have an extensive knowledge of Judge Dredd. You cannot just come in off the street and decide, you know, today I'll write Judge Dredd, read two or three comics, and then go, yeah, that's what it's all about. Because you're going to end up retreading the ground that other people have tread before you. Basically, you'll be walking in the footprints of giants. And
Yeah. Because you're also, there is that thing that you know, you're not only sort of writing to keep up with the writers that are presently writing Judge Dredd, but then you've also got that massive back history. So like you say, it is sort of writing against, you know, John Wagner. so that brings a sort of certain level of, you need to have, you know, a certain level of skill and sort of confidence to do that. And I think that's why Matt will kind of sort of stagger people to write Judge Dredd. You know, that's why you do sort of Future Shocks first, and that's what I did. So,
well, Tom, tell us a little bit about how you came to be writing Judge Dredd in the first place.
Yeah, I was trying to remember this because it was I hadn't actually thought about writing Judge Dredd. Strangely enough, my main thing was wanting to sort of do a series, and I can't remember if I'd already started Outlier at that stage. And then I think I was in a conversation with Al Ewing, and he sort of suggested, oh, you know, try and do some Dredds. So just on the off chance, I sort of sent an idea to Matt, which he liked, which I was kind of sort of surprised. It was my first go at it. I thought I would just get an immediate knockback. So, and then from there, it was immediately intimidating because you suddenly, like, you know, you have the rush of confidence, and then the moment after, you're like, all right, I've got to write this and I've got to do a really good Dredd. You know, it's like driving someone's limousine or something. And so it's like, but it worked really well, and it was a nice sort of, you know, one-off story. It's called Black Kisses, about a tattoo artist that creates this kind of tattoo out of smart ink that can replicate like an STD. So it was kind of a weird idea. And yeah, so that was my kind of first go. And then I kind of worked, you know, off and on since then. Again, it's a funny thing. I am a new Dredd writer, but that was 4 or 5 years ago, maybe 4 years ago that I got the first Dredd. So, but it's a very sort of drip effect, I think.
And in terms of the elements that you think make up a good Dredd story, Tom, you know, what do you think is key? Because we've already talked about how, you know, you've got to have a working knowledge of the past of Judge Dredd, but I guess you've also got to make it readable in its own right, because otherwise, if it's too mired in continuity, it's going to be unreadable other than for anyone other than the hardcore.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, that's why I sort of find kind of quite often divide stories between stuff that you can just read right off the bat. I guess an example of that would be the one that's just out at the moment with Brendan McCarthy, the sort of Hover Odds. It's a very sort of simple story, lots of action, but there's no, you don't need to know any of the continuity. But then another one I did recently called Sons of Booth, you know, a big part of that was knowing the joke of President Booth was this, you know, sort of despotic, patriotic American president that led to nuclear annihilation. and that's obviously, you know, I'm using that to do a kind of a part satire on current events. I mean, what I find with Dredd is I tend to sort of always be trying a different thing with it. So the things that I like really vary from, you know, very action kind of pieces to either a cool sci-fi concept or something that's a bit more nuanced, or, you know, so it varies.
Mm. I want to come back to something that Mike talked about, which is the fact that, and you've just touched on it as well, you can tell so many different stories with Judge Dredd, and there have been, you know, there's been black comedy, there's been war stories, there's been police procedurals, there's been sort of dynastic politics ones, and there's been very personal ones. Do you think sometimes that the people look at that and assume, oh, well, this is easy, I can just tell any story that I want?
Yes, yeah, no, I do, and that's the funny thing. I mean, it's I think Mike sort of touched on this as well. It's like you, in your head, before you write Judge Dredd, you think you've got all these stories, And then as soon as you have to kind of nail it down and really turn it into a proper script, that's when you start to realize what will and won't work. And it's quite strange that you sort of, there are a lot of things that don't work. And then there are things that, you know, just immediately fit perfectly into the sort of Dread world. And part of the, you know, the writing process is that sort of going through ideas and really just trying to find what will work.
Mike, one thing I'm interested in is the learning process and whether there have been times when you know Matt has come back and said no, that doesn't work, or you feel that you've not quite, you know, got exactly what you were going after. Has there been a time when you've thought, oh yeah, this works, but then when it's come to the crunch, you've missed something?
Yeah, that's happened quite a lot. It tends to happen at the idea stage than at the end, but it does. Yeah, I've gone down the road of developing an idea quite extensively. I tend to start off with a paragraph or two that I'd send to Matt, and he will say, generally that's how it works, and he'll say yes or no, or it's been done or whatever. And if he gives the approval for one, I expand into a more detailed outline, and usually then that's fine. But there are times I get even past the outline stage into the script stage where I'm going, this bit doesn't work at all. And it can be for various reasons. It can be because I realize something's already been done, or because it just doesn't fit in with how I want it to go. Or, you know, sometimes stories just don't flow. And it's infuriating and annoying and all that. But yeah, it happens. But then again, there are times when the story just flows immediately. Those are the good times. We live for those times. Those are the times we pretend to ourselves that we can do it. The rest of the time, we just you know, struggle through. The current story that I'm working on now, it started off as a I'm just developing it at the moment, but started off as if like I think I'm going to aim for six parts. But when I was working on it just yesterday, I went, hang on a second, after this story, this other thing could happen, and that would be quite interesting. So I sent it to Matt, and just a couple of lines saying, you know, what about this? And he went, yes, that sounds great, go for that. So that's given me a chance to expand into the story a little bit more. So the more space you have, of course, the more layers you can add. So that's one of those cases where something began to flow quite nicely. It doesn't mean it's going to stay that way. I mean, for example, later on today, I'll be working on the rest of the outline, and I might find I'm stuck again. But in general, knowing the Dread, knowing what happens in Just Dread is vital. You know, you've got to know your 40 years, not every single part of it, because no matter what you do, you're always going to get something wrong. But generally, you have to, you know, have at least a good idea of what's coming up, and what's going before and what's coming up. So with my with this story, which I can't say the name of, this wouldn't work if I didn't know the Madrid history pretty well, which I do. So.
Yeah. Can there be sometimes, because so many of the, in my humble opinion, of the best Dread stories are the one-parters, the two-parters that really say something about the city or about him or about Justice Department. Can there be a temptation sometimes to walk away from brevity and think, well, this could be a multi-part epic?
Yeah, I've definitely had that more than once where because, you know, partly because of money, but also because of fame, I want the story to be huge. But yeah, we have one coming up in the magazine. Again, I can't say the title of it, but it's a one-off. But I had so much fun writing that. I just thought, oh, this would be awesome if it was a multi-part, if we had, you know, you could add these characters in and do this, they could go there, and I realized no, because it really is it's a throwaway tale in many respects. It only works because it was a Megacity One. It won't work any other place. It has to be a one part, one off story, and I'm happy with that now. But the temptation, because the character, I've introduced a character who I just loved so much, I want to do more with her, but no. But then again, on the other hand, you get the opposite, where with Deep in the Heart, which came out there earlier in the year, there was a character introduced there who only appeared for like one and a half episodes, who I fell in love with, and she's coming back in a story called Ouroboros, which is 4 episodes coming up soon. So that's so sometimes it works both ways.
Tom, one thing that Judge Dredd has already, as a strip, has always been known for is the sheer number of ideas that over the years have been crammed into single episodes, or even just a single frame of one episode of a story. Can it be, as a writer, can it be quite tiring to have to constantly invent things and fill things with detail?
I mean, it can in some senses. I think it's just that thing that you know, you have a good idea and you're like, if I could do, you know, 3 parts on this, it would be amazing, rather than just like a really short burst. But then what you remember is that when you read it, those little short bursts are the things that really stick with you. And it's that kind of, you know, amazing richness of ideas. Because I always thought AD was way ahead of other comics for that, and way ahead of other science fiction stuff, just in that kind of disposable ideas every week, something new, and again in the sort of detail. I mean, even with the detail, what's funny is like sometimes the artist will add another layer of detail on top of that, just with either names in the background of shops or, you know, funny little odd, curious details. I think I did one with Boo Cook where he had an aged Deckard. It was a sort of pub scene, and he had a sort of aged Deckard sitting on a bar stool in the background with a little paper unicorn in his hand. And just, you know, so he'll throw in loads of funny details. And it's great. And the Jodie Foster home. I think that was great. And, you know, but I love all these sort of, you know, the big ideas and also I love that challenge of, and because it's a pretty good period in Judge Dredd as well, where you have to always bring that kind of A game of ideas and always try and sort of push it a bit. And that seems to be, you know, rewarding when it works. And it is difficult, but it's also satisfying when you look back on the work.
Mike, you've actually got an epic under your belt with the Every Empire Falls, as it was called in collection. Is that a challenge in of itself, trying to keep all those faces? Because it was a story told not just over a long period of time, but over multiple titles and different stories with lots of different characters. Yeah. How challenging is that to maintain the themes and ideas and issues that we've been talking about, while also having this big overarching plot?
Yeah, that is it. It was tricky because going back to an earlier point, every issue of every comic is someone's first experience of that title. So every issue of 2008, theoretically, some guy's reading Dredd or some girl's reading Dredd for the first time. So I've got to be aware of that with every story. I can't just solely rely on continuity. I can't solely rely on the idea that the readers have been around forever. So with Every Empire Falls, the whole thing started off, I don't know. Well, in the collected book, there's a couple of early stories that are part of the overall arc, but they weren't originally planned to be. It only really came into being when we started writing the what I call the Reclamation Saga, which is the sort of the Texas City. It was tricky trying to keep all of the plates spinning, but at the same time going back to earlier plates and saying, oh, we can include these too. So the earlier stuff with Judge Joyce and so forth was never originally going to be part of that story. I wanted Joyce to be part of Every Empire Falls, so therefore I had to address what I'd already done with him. So I think it worked out quite well. But then I'm used to that. With my novels, I mean, I'm just about to publish the ninth and final novel in the superhero series that I've been doing. I'm not trying to plug myself, but I am. But so that's 700, I don't know, just over 750,000 words, 770,000 words or something like that in that series alone. So over a period of 16 years. So I'm used to planting seeds and not being able to reap them for a very long time. And again, there's other things already planted in 2008 that I've done for over the past couple of years that might be another 3 or 4 years before if I'm allowed, before we get into so we plucking the fruits from those particular trees.
So this episode is called The Beginner's Guide to Writing Judge Dredd. If I'll come to you first, Tom. If somebody, you know, says I want to write Judge Dredd, I want to be a writer for 2080. Aside from the whole, make sure you get some future shocks under your belt. Make sure you've got, you know, writing experience under your belt. What would be your recommendations to them for how to nail that first Dredd tale?
Well, I think opening on your sort of strongest idea. A lot of people tend to have epics that they have at the back of their heads, and they're like, "Oh, what I'll do is I'll sort of do an okay idea, then they'll let me do my epic." And in reality, what you want to always be leading with is your very best idea, even if you think you're throwing that away, you know, on a very short kind of single issue story. You've always got to do your best, because when it's sort of filtered through and when you see it, you know, you're seeing it from the other side of the mirror, and actually exactly what we're talking about, it's been compared to all the other Dredds that have gone before it. So, you know, it is quite a big task. The other thing I would always say is, like, synopsis is the absolute perfect thing to try out an idea, because you've got to really nail down. Everyone's got ideas in their heads. Everyone's got scenes in their heads that they know would look cool and comic. But really, to have a full, complete story that's all neat and tidy and done, and that's the real tricky part. And if you can nail it in the synopsis, then it sort of leads to making the script a lot easier. But also, sort of, you know that it can work, and that's, yeah. That, I think that's key for me. Is that's what I've learned over the years, is doing a really good synopsis first, and that's your kind of springboard into then hopefully doing a good script.
Mike, what about you? What would be your advice to wannabe Dredd writers?
Well, I'd agree with everything Tom said there. If you can't present your story in a synopsis format, you cannot do it in a script. There's no room in your six pages for making it up as you go along and then trying to fudge an ending in the last page. So you've got to know how to pace it. Obviously with if you want to write in any medium, you've got to be familiar with that medium. So people who want to write Dredd have got to read it. You've got to read all sorts of comics. Also, you should always read outside your preferred genre anyway. Practice is the only way. Nobody gets it right first go. You write your story and have it peer reviewed, which is another great advantage of fanzines, is that, you know, your story will be reviewed by someone. But yeah, practice and never quit. That's the other thing, because, you know, as a writer, I've been writing full time forever, and I've always heard people come saying, "Oh, I've always wanted to be a writer. I've got this idea for a story." And I go, "Well, yeah, my ideas are worth like nothing." So you gotta stick to your idea. You know, stick to your plan, as it were. Yeah, stick to what you want to. You know, ideas are they say they used to be 10 a penny, but they're actually cheaper than that now. They're 20 a penny. So, you know, everybody's got ideas, but not everybody has the ability to see them through to the end. And that's what may separate a would-be Dredd writer from an actual published Dredd writer.
Yeah, I would agree with that, actually. That's a really good point. I always think with writing that it's, and art as well, it's not how you are on your best day. It's if you can cope with your worst day. So it's if you can still get through it, still write a story when you're having a difficult day, then you'd probably be a writer, because you're going to stick to it. So, yeah.
Well, I hope you got something out of that, Earthlitz, whether you're a prospective writer for 2000 AD or whether you're just interested in the process behind writing Judge Dredd. Thank you to our guests, Rob Williams, Chris Weston, Tom Eglinton and Michael Carroll. Next time on the 2000 AD Thrillcast in 2 weeks, we will be beginning a two-part episode with former art editor of 2000 AD, Robin Smith. It was a pleasure to sit down with him at his home and chew the fat over his relatively brief but very influential period as art editor, his own art, and what he's been doing since. So make sure you tune in a fortnight's time for the first episode of our chat with Robin. And that's all we've got time for. Earthlets, thank you for tuning in again. Please do help spread the word about the 2080 Thrillcast to 2080 fans and comics fans alike. And we shall see you in a fortnight. Splendid Verthrig.
Alert! 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 Thrill power levels dangerously high. Alert! Alert! Read 2000 AD every week. Ask your comic book store or newsagents now. Subscribe to the galaxy's greatest comic at 2000adonline.com. Subscribe digitally on our apps for Apple, Android, and Windows 10. And download DRM free copies from 2000adonline.com. Alert! Alert! Stand by for urgent updates. Search for 2000AD on Twitter and Facebook. Watch the latest videos at youtube.com/2000ADonline. And follow on Instagram at Insta2000AD. Program complete. Shutting down.